madness. This is Sparta!
Dear listener, we accept the fact that you have to sacrifice a whole hour to listen to whatever it is we're about to do wrong. And what we will do is wrong. You see us the way you want to see us, in the simplest of terms, in the most convenient definitions. But we found out that each one of us is a brain.
An athlete.
A princess.
Does that answer your question? Sincerely yours, The Geek Movie Club.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Geek Movie Club, episode 10, the podcast that is trialing new microphones. Hi, guys.
check one, two. Hello, did you receive the check?
I did. I'm Dave McVeigh.
I'm brand new Mike Richard Gray. I'm
David Longo. No, sorry, I'm just joking. The mics work fine.
Yeah. I'm Dave Longo.
Yes, so we are trialing some Heil PR40 microphones. We haven't got them going through proper preamps. All we're doing is just trialing them straight out in our original rig. So, apologies in advance.
So, David, what's our feedback email address for the show again?
Feedback at geekmovieclub.com.
Okay, so hit up feedback at geekmovieclub.com to let me know how my hair sounds.
These mics do sound pretty good, though, don't
they? They do. They've got a nice, lush sound to them. Yeah, and so when you say things like moist manticore.
that's pretty good.
It is not so bad. So we'll see how these play out.
Don't worry, the show won't be like this. We won't just be going, let me try this.
How do we sound? This is the Geek Movie Club. This is where our clubhouse comes into session. And we talk about anything that comes to our little geek minds.
Can we even hear that on the new mics?
Probably not.
No. It's too louder, though.
I think we need an actual gavel sound on the soundboard.
We're going to have to do this old school radio style, but we've actually got little
two coconuts
together on there.
So for those who don't do recordings or anything like that, these are dynamic microphones that have a very, very concentrated center of sound. So stuff that happens outside in the real world, you don't really hear. So anyway, this week we are going to chit-chat about nonsense, and we're also going to review 300 Rise of an Empire, which we got to see the other night.
Yes. You guys got to see.
We got to see. Sorry, Dave.
In IMAX 3D.
In IMAX 3D, and we're going to talk a little bit about that.
God, I sound good.
How are the levels, Dave? Should we release this one?
we'll see when we play it back. Anyway, so let's get on with this. How's your week been, guys?
Pretty good. I saw a couple of movies this week. I'll talk about one later. At the time we're recording this, I'm embargoed from talking about.
The good news is we're going to release this episode a day late, so you can.
Which means while we're recording this, you'll have to take your headphones off.
Yes.
So you won't actually be able to hear my review now, because that would be breaking embargo.
By telling us, though, are you also breaking embargo?
Yes, I probably am, actually.
So in a way, you're telling the future.
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah.
So what we'll do, Dave, is when he's ready to start talking about this movie that he's not allowed to talk about, you and I will step out of the room.
Okay. Right? Yeah.
And then we'll listen back to it.
And I'll listen to it on Thursday.
The thing is, David, that's what I've always wanted, just to do this show by myself. Because I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but God, I sound good.
That would be hilarious if we just walked away and he never called us back. And then we came back, he did like a two-hour review.
And then they just like got this major buzzsaw, and it was just,
the felt. Was amazing.
In case you haven't guessed, I'm going to talk about The Muppets Most Wanted.
Oh, I want to see that so badly. So badly I want to see that.
There's a running theme where we resent Richard for having seen a movie before.
Can I just tell you that the new shock mounts and the new mics actually have that new plastic smell?
I know, because I'm nice and close to this mic. All I can smell is shock mount.
That's lovely.
I smell a bit of ozone. Is that all right?
That's the new electric fence we put it around your chair.
Dave, just quite for a moment. Does this smell like chloroform to you?
Get in nice and close to smell
it. Oh, jeez. Wow. You're testing out those shock mounts, that's for sure. Actually, would that be a great name for a band? Shock mounts.
Yeah.
Tell us about The Muppets Reloaded.
It's not called. We'll get there. We have a whole segment around what we've been watching.
Is it called The Muppets Revolution?
The movie's actually called Muppets Most Wanted, but there's it was originally going to be called The Muppets Again, and the opening song in the film makes it abundantly clear that they intended to have that title of the film right up until shooting.
Tell me something. because I missed the beginning of the conversation. I heard you guys all talking about it. Tell me about what this the hell is going on with Steven Seagal. What was?
Oh, look, there was. If you want to look it up on YouTube, we don't want to make light of the whole situation.
No, but I want to make light of him.
Yeah, so. in Ukraine, Crimea, and Russia at the moment. Because there are no Russian troops in Crimea. No, I just want to make that clear. They just speak Russian and are wearing Russian uniforms and driving Russian tanks.
And smoke cigarettes.
And smoke cigarettes. Yeah. Yeah. We are not Russian. We are not here for war. see Muppets Most Wanted, by the way. But Stephen, for some reason, some TV station chose to bring in their expert to talk about this with Steven Seagal.
When did Steven Seagal become an expert in world politics?
I don't know, the same time that Dennis Rodman went as an ambassador to North Korea, I guess. It was...
Fair
it
enough.
Makes his. I love this new world that we're living in.
Well, we did have an actor who was a president, so I guess
that's
true. Wait a minute, we should have done a bit more research because maybe he's got a book about the Ukraine coming out. You know, we don't know.
Steven Seagal can read.
If he wrote a book about the Ukraine,
you don't have to be able to read.
No. I think we got to be very clear.
It's an audio book.
The part of this conversation that I did come into was you were playing a clip from, and his pronunciation of Ukraine was wonderful.
Yeah, if you look this up, it's something like Ukraine.
It's Ukraine.
Ukraine. Yeah.
Which I'm sure is probably how they say it, but you know,
it might be. You know, we're all going to have egg on our faces. That's actually how it's pronounced. And Steven Seagal, smartest man on the planet.
The observation I would like to make about that clip
Steven
that I saw.
Steven Seagal is the Mr. Terrific for the real world.
That's Steven Seagal's eyes are disappearing. Did you notice this? He's got this big puffy face and this goatee beard and these little tiny little slits, like his eyes have just disappeared under the folds of puffiness of his face.
I think we have the title for this week's show.
Folds of puffiness. He's not looking healthy.
No, he's not. It's been a while since he's action heroed.
Yeah. He's been off busy being a real lawman. Did you see that TV series that you've seen?
Yeah.
Was it Steven Seagal Lawman, where he would go ride around as a deputy in some backwater town? It was seriously. It was like somewhere out in the south. I don't know where, but it would go into Seagal vision where he's in the back seat, and they would show like the perp on the street, and it would go into like infrared view.
He was actually licensed as a sheriff, right?
He's a deputized. He's a fully authorized deputy in that council.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's scary.
Wow. By the way, I sound so good. Have I mentioned that?
On that note, Richard, what have we been watching?
We've been watching a bunch of stuff this week. Let's talk about.
I think we have a theme.
We do actually have a theme. I was just listening to myself, sorry, because I don't know if I've mentioned this, but oh, wait, sorry,
wrong one,
wrong theme. I don't even know if I've got the new theme. Oh, here it is.
I'm watching you, Wazowski. Always watching.
We put it down to being mesmerized by the new mics, right?
I don't know if I've mentioned this, but...
They're really shiny and pretty.
Right. What we're having... Well, the big movie... Well, let's just talk about 300, Rise of an Empire.
Sure.
Of an empire. Rise of Empire in Ukraine. This is the prequel, come sequel, come remake, come parallelogram.
I actually have a little bit of the trailer if you want to hear it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Let's have a little listen.
Wait, will people still be able to hear me talking while we're...
No.
I'm not too sure. Words stand as a warning.
Look, he's throwing fire. Oh, fire.
It burns.
I am a god.
And only stout wooden ships can save them.
Oh, hello.
Wooden ships.
Yeah, I'm going to need you to not crash the ship. Legendary pitches.
Here she comes. Only the gods can defeat the Greeks. Here she comes. Eva. Yeah, that's enough.
It's just naked men now.
That's Mardi Gras float. Okay, cool.
Because I didn't see this movie. Was he born in like a vat of gold?
He was a normal man who basically they turned into a man god.
He was working in a bridal shop in Flushing, Queens till his boyfriend kicked him out in one of those crushing scenes.
No, there's this whole nonsensical thing about how he goes off and they turned him into a man god. So
yeah. It's the thing is that, and the one problem I had with that was that in the first film it was kind of like you could almost get away with the idea, and I think we said this over on panels this week that that was how everyone else viewed him. Mm. You know, this kind of godlike creature who was 10
it was
foot
a perception.
Taller.
It's a
perception thing. And he wasn't really this 10 foot tall god. This, he literally goes off into the desert and becomes a god.
He walks into a vat and comes out all glowing and golden.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I thought that was a little bit much. I don't think we needed that at all.
No, because it was originally based on Frank Miller's unpublished graphic novel, which I don't actually think exists.
Well, also, considering that I read something on that graphic novel that actually said that it was a prequel about the rise of Xerxes. Mm. So that is not the film that is actually presented here, which would lead me to believe that the reason why it was never published or finished was because they went in a different direction. And Frank Miller will probably release a Rise of an Empire graphic novel now based on the film rather than the other way around. I think this little section of the film is probably based on the few pages of Xerxes that exist.
Agreed. There's only a couple of pages, and I'm looking at them here now, and it starts with that kind of, you know, pre-marathon, Battle of Marathon stuff, and, you know, it's got a few, it starts in 490 BC, it's, you know, it's kind of got the Persians in boats, and you can see some of the imagery there that was actually used, you know, from the design of the boats is used in there, but that's literally it. We have four pages of this graphic novel that appeared in, if you're a comic reader, go back and check out the print copy of Dark Horse Presents number one, because they've removed it from the digital edition.
Right, right.
So I suspect that they will be releasing this in a completely different form later in the year.
Now, with all that being said, I actually didn't hate the film. No. I thought the film was, you know, it was visually spectacular, all the things you kind of half expect. And the interesting thing is, we talked about this on panels, but we'll talk about it in more detail because it's film now. But the interesting thing is, I remember, because I saw 300 at the cinema, and then I saw it on DVD after it came out on DVD, and I haven't really seen it again for a couple of years. And my memory of 300 was like this movie. Fast paced, lots of ramping, this and that, and the next thing it just nonstop and goes and goes and goes. And I thought when I saw this one, I went, okay, it's more of the same. It's interesting because I watched 300 again last night in preparation for panels. And 300 is actually a lot slower moving than this film is. 300 actually takes its time. It's more deliberate. There's actually long passages of 300 where they don't fight.
Where they're just sitting on the porch, whittling.
And they're talking.
Just whittling.
And there's stuff in the council chambers. And, you know, and there's lots of humor.
And there's actors in there. I'd completely forgot. We're in it. Dominic West. Michael Fassbender's in it.
Michael Fassbender, who is actually really good. You know?
And we'll fight in the shade.
Yes.
Fight in the shade.
I love that all those arrows are coming in and one of them starts to giggle.
Yeah.
And he goes, what are you laughing at? And he goes, fight in the shade.
Were there like huge epic water battles in this one?
Yes.
Yes.
So most of this is ship-to-ship combat.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
So this is about the Athenians. And
I just wanted someone to say, you sunk my battleship. At some stage.
I wanted someone to say that in Battleship.
In Battleship.
Oh, I was waiting for it in Battleship, quite frankly. So this is
Liam
Neeson's
final lines.
You sunk my battleship.
And for a film that is reportedly based on a graphic novel called Xerxes, Xerxes actually isn't in it very much.
No, in fact, it's mostly Eva Green as Artemisia. Mm.
I hate to sound sexist. She is hot.
Look, you know, I'll go in with you on that.
Yeah, and she's got absolutely insane eyes. And my wife actually makes this observation every time she sees it. She goes, she looks crazy. And it's like, yeah, but there's something alluring about
that. Which is why she's the dame to kill for in the other trailer that came out this week.
The tagline is seize your glory. I think that's apt right now.
You've got Australian actor Sullivan Stapleton playing Themistocles. I love it how I stumbled over Stapleton, but not Themistocles.
I'm impressed that you got them. I can't even say that name. So
but they...
King Leonidas was a lot easier to remember.
Yeah.
And say.
Yeah, what was wrong was just King Darius. So you've got... It's an interesting thing because I didn't mind that Xerxes stuff when it was his like origin story. Because I kind of like that stuff,
I quite like that, you know? Yeah.
And all the Eva Green stuff, her origin story, people have kind of complained that, you know, she's not like the real... character that she's based on, Artemisia, was not actually a Greek sex slave.
Mm.
She was in
details.
She was in fact a queen.
Can we also point out that Xerxes wasn't really 10 feet tall or a god? So.
Well, there's that, and which brings us back to what these films are about. They're a stylistic reinterpretation of a myth that's become a legend.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, even though they're based in, you know, ancient history.
They're stylized.
And, you know, basically her story is, you know, based on a lot of the writings of Herodotus and stuff like that. Not, and that's pretty much all we've got to go on. you know, it's open to interpretation, yeah. You know, just as much as, and I said this over in panels, just as much as Frank Miller's original graphic novel was just as much based on the 1962 film about Spartans, this is a whole melting pot of different influences.
Absolutely. You know? And it was basically saying, we need a sequel, so let's set a sequel somewhere else where it's happening.
Yeah.
And it's the same time period, but it's different people because, of course, sorry, spoilers for real life, the 300 died. so it couldn't really make a sequel of them, but it's actually what happened next, basically. And yes, you're right, when you described it as a prequel, what is it? A prequel, a sequel, and
a remake.
And a remake all at the same time.
And also running a parallelogram.
And a parallelogram, thank you. Because it literally is everything. There is prequel components where in the 300, they actually talk about the Battle of Marathon. In this, we see the Battle of Marathon. Then we have...
which is where Xerxes' father was killed.
Killed, which led to him becoming the god that he is in Eva Green and all sorts of stuff. So basically, we have all of that. Then we have them coming...
who was killed by Themistocles as well. Yeah,
there you go. And when we have the sea battles going on with the Athenians, basically, this is happening simultaneously as the 300 is happening. Mm. Because they keep referring to the Spartans at... doing their battle. Mm. And they're
so the Athenians, the boy lovers.
The boy lovers are doing, this is what they're doing during that time. And then we have the sequel part, which is the third act of the film, which we won't spoil, but no. The third act of the film is what happens next.
And I'm pleased to say that a lot of the actors who came back, except for Jared Butler.
Obvious reasons.
Yeah, because for the sequel part, obviously, we know that he didn't make it out of the first film. We don't see him in the parallel stuff. We do see... images of him.
But we don't need to see him in the parallel stuff because there's a whole movie of that.
Yeah, exactly.
So we can just go back and watch that
film. Movie's happening over there meanwhile.
Exactly.
But we do still get Lena Headey back as...
who, it's interesting, after watching 300 last night, 9 years, she has aged. Mm. She's still looking good, but she's aged. And it's really odd that this is supposed to be like literally literally within months of that time. And you sit there going... yeah, they maybe shouldn't have waited so long.
It has been a while since that film
came
out.
What, 9 years?
2006 it came out, yeah.
Yeah. So, now, Dave, you have an interesting perspective on this because you didn't like 300.
No, but I should rewatch 300, I feel, because I only watched 300 once, and we were talking about this in panels, but to say again, you know, like the original 300 was one of the first films that came out in IMAX.
Mm.
Yeah, and my experience of 300 was sitting in the front row, the very left of the cinema, and with my, as I said in panels, with the back of my head in the middle of my shoulders.
Right.
You know, and so I think that I should rewatch it because we read the comic book, and the comic book was really good.
Yeah, the comic book is great. So, and if you want to know more about the comic, go listen to Behind the Panels.
But I tried to watch this week. I just couldn't get to it.
I'd be interested. I would actually be interested for you to rewatch 300 first and then go and see this because I would be curious to hear your take on it. For somebody who wasn't enamored by the first one. Mm. Richard, what do you, out of how many Spartan abs would you give this film?
I would give this a 3-pack of Spartan abs. Full 6-pack. I'd give it a 3.
I'm going to give it 3 and a little bit, I think. Yeah, I quite enjoyed it.
Because I gave the original when it came out 3.5 because I didn't think it was a perfect film by any means. And I quite liked it though, but I think this is not quite as good. But it's just, I've actually enjoyed 300 a lot more now.
So I was gonna say, as a reflection, you want to give 300 a new rating?
I want to give 300 4 abs.
4 abs. Okay, I'd give the original 300 4 abs as well. Definitely, yeah. Like that. And this one 3 and a bit.
I'll give this one 3 abs.
Okay, fair enough. More, I think this is
more abdominals than I'm showing anyway.
I don't think this film is.
I have a 1-pack.
I have no pack. the thing about this film and the words coming out of my mouth are going to be surprising. But
are they Yoo-hoo Monkey Ringding?
Not quite. Not that surprising.
Not as surprising.
But I think that Snack proved himself to be a better filmmaker.
For people who don't listen to our other show, Snack is our affectionate term for Zack Snack Snyder.
And I think Snack actually showed, for somebody who is responsible for Sucker Punch, he actually showed us that he can actually put a decent film together.
Mm.
And when you watch... I'm going to use your quote here because I said this to you at the cinema and I think this is relevant. You said once that the problem with Zack Snyder is he knows what looks cool, but he doesn't know why it's cool.
Yeah, I said that about Sucker Punch.
With this new movie, it is somebody who thinks what Zack Snyder does is cool, but doesn't know why it's cool, so he's copying the coolness.
Dude, you just got meta. You know what I loved about that? You quoted me.
I did quote you. And you sound great. great.
I sound great. Yeah.
What you should have done was have me read out my own quote, and then the audience would have just been ecstasy.
They would have just been wet, you know?
It had just been a moist manticore.
Moist manticore.
This has been a moist manticore production.
And I'm not explaining the moist manticore.
We never have to explain anything.
Never have to explain it.
David, love means never having to explain.
Absolutely. Richard, you saw something else this week.
I did, because as you probably recall, if you listened to Film Actually, when the first Muppets film came out, I adored that.
Did you? I thought you hated
them. I love all things Muppets. I'm still wanting to know, why are there so many songs about rainbows? What's on the other side? The Muppets remake, and I was so lucky I got to interview Jason Segel when that came out. But I adored this film. I think I'd seen it twice by the time I got to interview him, and that was before the movie even came out. It was just, and I saw it again at the cinema. It was just a wonderful film. I love everything. I love the songs written by Brett McKenzie. They've got a lot of that creative team back. Jason Segel is co-writing on Muppets Most Wanted, but they've still got, who's Jason Segel's co-writer generally?
Nicholas Stoller.
Nicholas Stoller. Nicholas Stoller's back writing this. He's co-written it with James Bobbin, the director of the first film, who is directing this again.
Oh, James Bobbin did come back. I thought he wasn't coming back.
No. He's back on this one. Everyone's back except for Segel, okay. Basically.
Is he too good for them or something?
No, I think it was like how I Met Your Mother commitments or something like that, wasn't it?
But he's not. No, he actually said that he wasn't needed in the second film because Amy Adams isn't back. It was like their story's done.
Right.
He even in the interview I did with him before the movie came out, he said his job was to bring the Muppets back into the public consciousness. He's done that. Now he can go on happy knowing that everyone knows who the Muppets are again and the Muppets can have a second cinematic career.
Right.
And this film literally picks up. It's, you see the fireworks from the end of the first film, the end, minor spoilers here, people. It pans down, you see Amy Adams and Jason Segel lookalikes and all the Muppets standing behind them going, right, cut, what do we do now? You know, and then it's an old school Muppet film again. And it goes on that way. It's so self-referential. There are a ton of cameos. The songs aren't quite as instantly catchy as the original one. There's no Life's a Happy Song. There's no Am I a Man or Am I a Muppet in this one. But there's a great song. It's something must be like I'll Give It to You or something. I Can Get It to You, which is there is a fake Kermit who was running around. You kind of sound like this, running around. Pig, I will give you a Muppet.
Is he KGB in it?
The KGB is in it. Yeah, okay. They got Tina Fey plays like a Russian prison guard. It's brilliant. But who falls in love with Kermit?
That is awesome.
All the celebrities cast in this, Ricky Gervais and Tina Fey and so forth, they're brilliant. They're perfectly cast. It's not just stunt casting. There are a few, you know, stunt cameos, and there are a few Disney cameos that unless you watch the Disney Channel, you won't recognize them. Sadly, I confess that I even knew the cameo from Disney Channel's Austin and Ally in there because I do watch that show. But, you know, the great thing about the show is that there are a couple of great songs. There's this one, as I said, called I'll Give It to You, which is him running around going, you want a little cupcake? I'll give it to you. That's pure Brett McKenzie. That's pure Flight of the Conchords sort of stuff. But it is just a fun Muppet caper. Going back to, you know, your kind of movies like, you know, The Great Muppet Caper.
Or
The Muppets Caper. Take Manhattan or any of those kind of big capery films. So I love the Muppets. I love everything about the Muppets. If you love the Muppets, if you like the Muppets, you're going to enjoy this film.
Let's have a little taste of the trailer. I haven't actually played this trailer, so I don't even know what's going to play in it. So let's have a little taste of this trailer and see what comes up.
Let's check it out.
The world's greatest criminal has stolen the greatest treasures, escaped the greatest prisons, and he bears a strong resemblance to someone. You know,
it's not easy being mean.
It's Constantine, the world's most dangerous frog.
Check this out.
Oh, look, it's
Well, what did you do with Kermit? There must be some mistake. I'm Kermit the Frog. I'm not Constantine.
You're going to be here a while.
Hi-ho, Kermit the Frog here.
Kermit the Frog here.
I am Kermit.
And now you guys have all the freedom you want.
What?
When do I do the indoor running of the bulls?
I can't watch.
Dominic, international tour manager.
Dominic,
Bad guy?
Bad dude. It's French.
Oh. My name will go down in history as greatest thief of all time.
You mean our names, right?
Of course. My name first, then spacebar, 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 your name.
Hit it, boys.
Do you guys think this Kermit's been acting a little weird lately?
That's ridiculous.
I'm getting completely sidetracked watching this trailer.
I actually didn't see this particular trailer before I saw the film, and I'm glad I didn't because there's a few gags.
And they're giving away a lot of gags in there.
But like, and because I literally went, I tried not to before because I knew I was going to love the movie and I wanted to go inside on scene. And I just love everything about the movie. So it's not as fresh and fun as the first Muppets film, but they even reference the fact in the film that there were people who were disappointed with the first film because it wasn't really a Muppets film, you know, and all that sort of stuff, and how they brought in new characters at the expense of classic characters, and then they wheel on those classic characters who disappear out. I'm not going to ruin who, but, you know, Muppets fans will get a kick out of it. Dave asked me before the show, all those cameos that we see in the trailer, is that all of them? No. There is wall-to-wall cameos.
Because that's part of the fun of a Muppets movie. Hey?
Yeah. And it's look, you know, as I said, you like Muppets, you're going to like Muppets Most Wanted, although it's clear from the opening song that the title Muppets Again was meant to be the title of this film. Yeah. There's a whole song called The Muppets Again at the start of it. It's the sequel song. But even in that even in the sequel song, they'd make fun of the fact they're saying, this is a sequel, we're doing a sequel. And it's like, yeah, but don't, and there's a lyric in there that's basically, yeah, but don't you realize this is the seventh sequel to our original theatrical outing, you know? So they really, really make fun of themselves from the get go. So.
It sounds good. I really want to see this. I really want to see this.
It is good film.
It's not easy being mean.
I am Kermit the Frog. It's brilliant.
No,
love
it's
it.
Fantastic.
Neep.
What?
Neep.
Neep. Neep. Okay. What else we got on the agenda today?
I got a couple of stories here. You want to talk about those?
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
Okay, first of all, any of you ninja?
What?
Wanted. Apparently, there's a job listing in Japan. Part-time ninja for an entry-level position. No experience required. Training available. Apparently, this is posted on Hello Japan, the government-run employment website. The ninja will be given black clothing and a book of secrets to teach from.
Wait, can we first?
Hang on.
Is this real?
Yes, it is.
Okay, that's all I wanted to know.
The company,
that's awesome.
The company writes in another listing that while someone with actual ninja experience is preferred, the ideal candidate is someone who likes both ninjas and children.
Wait a minute. Ninjas and children. How does that equate?
Well,
are they a part-time babysitting service or...
The gig is for working with students, elementary school age and other, during hour-long Sunday classes at the Tanaka Ninja School in Nagoya. The school is part of a larger company that offers a wide range of cultural classes for children and adults. Decipher the Book of Secrets and enjoy learning ninjutsu. Well, I'm signing up.
I'm in. Yeah. I'm going to go join. I might get into shape while I'm at it.
It says here the only downside to being an inexperienced part-time ninja who likes kids is that it's not especially lucrative.
And you could actually get killed.
The pay starts at 900 yen, $8.73 an hour, with a travel reimbursement of 1,000 yen. That's nothing yen per day. But you wouldn't become a ninja for money.
Could you put that on a passport? Inexperienced part-time
ninja.
Do you think they'd let you on a plane if you had that on your passport?
Sounds like an 80s sitcom, doesn't it? Inexperienced part-time ninja.
He's got the skills to show you how to do it.
Oh, dear.
I got another story here, which I loved. A man has sued McDonald's for $1.5 million after only being given one serviette. or if you prefer, if you're in America, napkin.
Sorry. He couldn't go get himself another napkin?
No. Webster Lucas filed the suit alleging he was caused undue mental anguish after a Pacoima, California restaurant only gave him one napkin and he claims that the manager made a racist remark towards him when he asked for more.
What was the racist remark? Oh, that clown is scary.
Goes on to say, unhappy eater Webster Lucas reported that he wants $1.5 million from the fast food company after he claimed the staff only gave him one napkin. Lucas says he ordered a quarter pounder deluxe. Well, that's his first problem. at the Pacoima, California. I hope I'm pronouncing Pacoima right.
Sounds right.
California entry on the January the 29th. But on opening up his paper bag, wait for it, he found just one paper tissue.
And that's because if we've learned anything from Lethal Weapon, they fuck you at the drive-thru.
He alleges that when he returned to the counter to ask for more, managers refuse. Lucas alleges the debate took a racist turn when the Mexican-American boss mumbled something about you people, which Lucas took to be a reference to him being black. An offer to receive free burgers as an apology was an insult, he added. He now wants a fat payoff from the chain, reports TMZ.
Maybe if they offered him free napkins.
Yes, it's because of the incident, Lucas claims, caused him undue mental anguish. Yeah, I think that's a completely justified lawsuit.
Can I just throw it out there that if you're going to get mental anguish by not getting enough napkins, dude, get some help. You know,
I don't think it could go wrong way because like I've got a beard. We've all got beards of some kind here, and if I tend to take a few.
Oh, I do not at any point in the story begrudge him asking for another napkin because when I go to McDonald's, I don't know about you, I grab about five napkins. Mm.
It's actually been quite a number of years since I've been in a McDonald's, but no, go on.
Yeah, I work near a mall. What can I do? But, I mean, he was given a napkin. He went back. He wanted another napkin. The fact that they didn't give him the napkin to start with is just what happened to customer service. But secondly, it shouldn't have caused him mental anguish.
Well, I don't know. It's not easy being mean.
It sounds like him and like four other people. Like, you know, today we're going to go to McDonald's and we're going to find something to sue them.
We're
going to
find it. Yeah, it sounds to me a little bit pre-planned.
Too much ice in my soda. Nah, what do you mean? Work.
What do you mean? There's no ice. You mean I got to drink this coffee hot?
Too many pickles in the burger.
Oh, something's being handed around now. What is being handed around? Anyway, doesn't matter. All right, so from too many napkins.
You didn't ask me what I've been watching this week.
Oh, who cares? No. what have you been watching, Dave?
No, I watched Terminator 2 recently.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No, and I was thinking, like, in terms of James Cameron movies, what is the better sequel, Aliens or Terminator 2?
Oh.
That's an interesting question.
I got to go Aliens, I think.
Oh, good question.
I'll probably have to go Aliens, though I think at the time. No, actually, at the time it was Aliens, but It's hard to say because both it, you know, tell you what, here's my thing. Both in the case of Terminator, they're both James Cameron films. Whereas in the case of Alien and Aliens,
He's sequelizing somebody else
and he put his own stamp on it. I think, to me, Aliens, this is a far more serious answer to a very simple question, but I think Aliens, because it made, you know, the Alien franchise into this big action blockbuster based on a very claustrophobic horror film. Whereas Terminator 2, he just went bigger and better, and it's, let's face it, more or less the same plot.
Interestingly enough, I'm going to slightly disagree with you because...
Well, fuck you. And you know what? That's our catchphrase. That's our catchphrase now for when we disagree.
That's right. Fuck you.
But it sounds so good on these mics.
It does. Fuck you. No, I was about to say, I agree. I think it is Aliens. But I'll tell you why I think it's Aliens. Because I'm one of the very few people in the world, and it's going to be really controversial, we'll probably get email about it. I'm one of the few people in the world who actually thinks that the first Terminator is a better film.
No, I think the first Terminator is a better film.
And I actually really like the first Terminator. I saw it in the cinema when it first came out. Blew my mind, this film. And when the sequel was coming out, I was like, oh, man, a Terminator 2 sequel is coming out. I'm really excited. But I was actually disappointed with Terminator 2. I thought the visual effects were very clever. I thought the big bombastic effects and so forth. But when you look at the Terminator is a horror film. Mm. The Terminator is a classic horror film trope. It is one girl, one monster. Monster's unstoppable. Keeps walking after her. No matter what happens, he keeps coming.
It's actually a great porno film trope as well.
Well, there is that
too. One girl, one monster.
When you look at Terminator...
So is Alien, I guess.
Well, yeah, Alien is. When you look at Terminator 2,
penis that burst out of John Hurt's chest.
There was nothing Freudian about that design at all.
Not
right?
at all.
Wibbly wobbly.
You have seen H.R. Giger's work before. Yeah. Right?
Have you seen what the alien originally looked like?
A vagina?
No, it's actually a penis.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah. Actually a penis.
Yeah, in the actual H.R. Geiger like Necronomicon, that's the awesome. Original Xenomorph was actually a penis head.
What was that? That
you can look
film
it up. It's not
where
a
the
joke.
Penis is evil. What
the
was that?
The penis is evil.
What was that?
Zardoz.
Oh, Zardoz. Yeah. Yeah. I think we need that sound clip on the.
I have that sound clip somewhere. I gotta find it. The soundboard's messed at the moment. But as I was saying, when Terminator 2 came out, it was all this bombastic action and everything else. But they lost the core of what made the Terminator for me, and that core of it was Arnold being a bad guy.
Yes.
And by softening the Arnold character, I sat there watching and yeah, okay, it's all okay and everything else, but I just wasn't with it.
You often see this now in a lot of things when you live long enough for the villain to become the good guy. you actually see that, you know, they try and make, it's really hard for them to make a sequel because the villain is so popular now. Even in, you know, as wonderful as the sequels to the original Star Wars were, you could see there was an attempt to make Darth Vader a little more accessible, you know, a little bit more of a...
Softened him. By Return of the Jedi, they'd softened him like
crazy. He was just a thug in the first film.
Yeah.
You know? And, wow, so Dave's just showing me a picture of Penis Alien now. And dude's cut, let me say. Wow.
It's the original incarnation.
Oh, wow. It's yeah, he's actually got, like, the alien coming out of the mouth. There are penises coming out of the mouth.
All right.
Just, like, shooting out. Wow, well, there you go.
There you go. Yeah. Anyway, so with Aliens, by the way, so we come back
that
to Aliens.
That made for great radio.
We come back to Aliens. I look at Aliens, and I actually personally prefer Alien as a film. I think Alien will stand the test of time. I think it'll be a masterpiece
to
come.
But agree with you.
Aliens is so much damn fun that you sit there and you watch it and just go, let's just go crazy.
I agree with you. I was purely comparing Aliens to Terminator 2.
No, absolutely. So, no, I'm just saying Terminator 2 Judgment Day.
Or
and
T2.
I look at Aliens as a separate film. I don't even think about it really as a sequel to the first Alien because it's so goddamn different in every way. And I just love the Aliens to death.
Kane seemed fine.
Dave, you posed the question. Tell us about it.
Well, I don't know. I like this idea of like taking someone else's work and then doing your own spin on it, which is what's impressive about Aliens, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah.
And then in a weird way, he does do a different spin on his own idea in Terminator 2, doesn't he? You know, like Connor becomes the Terminator, the human becomes more machine.
You
know, and then there's also that cool idea of ramping up the action of like, let's have a Terminator that's even more, you know, able than Arnold is. But I don't know, that's why it's such a hard thing for me, because like after watching Terminator 2, you're
thing
like,
is though,
man, both these sequels are so good. Like,
By no means, none of us are saying that T2 is a bad film.
Not at all.
I think
they're both great. That's what makes the question
T2
so
is actually better for me on the second viewing, because once the anticipation was gone, then you go, okay, now I can watch it for the film it is. The one thing I don't think T2 lives up to, and I know this is once again controversial, hold your emails, people, I know you're going to complain, but for the amount of money Terminator 2 cost, I don't quite see all of it on screen.
I agree because when your biggest amount of money is spent on pushing Robert Patrick through some gates.
Yeah. Well, the biggest amount of money in that film was paying Arnold.
Yeah.
Really, when you think about it.
And Axl Rose.
For me, the tipping point is just like how fucking awesome Aliens is, though. The last hour.
Oh, Aliens, you know, like, is a roller coaster.
That's for me the tipping point, you know, with the Alien Queen coming out, ripping like Bishop in half.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, like that battle, like, get away from her, you bitch. Like,
we have Aliens, we have an extended cut, which actually not only improves the film, but is the preferred version. The Terminator 2 extended cut that was released on DVD years later is got superfluous scenes.
The only scene that I actually really liked in the extended cut of Terminator 2 was where they talked about his chip, whatever it was. Remember when they destroyed the chip?
The learning computer.
Because by cutting that out, you kind of lose why he's humanizing. Because in the original, it was like, wow, why is he becoming so human so fast, you know? But by having that scene. But anyway, they cut that out, and well, I guess they did for whatever reason they did it. I prefer watching the theatrical cut of Terminator 2. But you're absolutely right. The extended version of Aliens is the only cut to watch. Because it makes more sense. Ripley's daughter sequence put into it, the turret scenes put back into it. It all makes sense. You know, there's reasons for all of it.
Yeah, that Ripley's daughter sequence is amazing,
actually. Well, and it's so important because it explains why she latches onto Newt so hard. Is because she lost her daughter, you know?
God damn you, Bishop!
They mostly come out at night. Mostly.
Actually, there's an amazing mixtape by an Australian group called Yacht Club DJs who do mashups, and they're one of their mixtapes from 2012, I think. It's called They Mostly Come Out at Night. Mostly.
Oh, cool.
And it uses that at the very beginning, and you just, and then they just drop it in the middle. You just hear They Mostly Come Out at Night. Mostly.
there's also the argument. Sam Raimi actually said this once, which I really loved, and it's ironic considering that Sam Raimi went on to make huge blockbuster films. But early on in Sam Raimi's career, he actually said that he didn't like working with big budgets. Mm. He'd worked on Darkman, which actually gave him a lot more money than he normally worked with. And he actually said that the problem with more money is you get less creative because suddenly you have all the toys to play with. And when you got all the toys, your creativity doesn't soar. And I kind of felt that way with Terminator 2.
You better get back because it'll be dark soon and they mostly come at night. Mostly.
Sorry, I didn't mean to launch that straight away.
That's okay.
Magic.
So when you look at Aliens was made on a paltry budget to the point where when he took the script to Fox, they said, how on earth are you going to make this film for this minor budget when you clearly state in the script hundreds of aliens are coming after them? And Cameron actually said, I'm going to do the entire thing with 8 suits.
Mm.
And that's all that's ever on screen. You never see more than 8 aliens at any time because there was only 8 suits made. And that sort of creativity of how to shoot.
I remember seeing a story where it was like the cryo chambers.
Yeah.
There were like 3 of them and Cameron was like, we need double this. And they were like, we don't have the money. So he came in like a couple hours later with like a mirror.
Mm.
You know, it was just like, now we have double them.
Yeah, absolutely. And, like, I remember...
That's a mind. You know?
No, absolutely. And I remember one of the most expensive effects in the entire film is the laser scanner that comes down at the beginning of the film. And Gail Ann Hurd, the producer of the film, actually said, you can't have the laser scanner. It's too expensive. You just can't have that effect. It's not going to happen. You're not going to get it. Simple as that. So Cameron went out, took out his checkbook, and paid for it himself. He said, I'm going to have my laser scanner, you know?
The guns are Steadicams, right?
They're Steadicam rigs. Yeah, the Steadicam rigs. It's so creative. Terminator 2 and Terminator 1, so creative. The way they have to get away with trying to make everything work with low budget. You look at Terminator 2, he had all the money in the world, and basically it almost feels like it's lacking a little bit of creativity because it almost feels like they're going, well, whatever, it's just, we'll fix it in post, but we'll add a metal man, we'll do this, we'll do that, whatever.
It's difficult because it's the same director but they're years apart.
Mm.
So we have a case where Cameron, obviously at the height of his powers in the mid-80s, made Terminator and Aliens. And then years, you know.
What's interesting, though, is you can actually look at the progression.
Because
when you look at The Abyss, which is in the middle of all of that.
Yeah.
I really like The Abyss, but you can already start to see this is a man who's got far too many toys, you know?
Mm.
And The Abyss
to the point where he got to Titanic, where he used, you know, I actually don't like that film. I liked it at the time, but we tried to watch it again recently. We watched an abridged version. We got invited to a 3D cut, and we got as much out of the hour-long abridged version as I did out of a 45-minute abridged
version. About 45 minutes, yeah.
And we saw the whole movie, basically the whole story. They just showed us all the essential scenes, and it worked.
It was the Reader's Digest version.
And it worked in a 45-minute cut. It really did. But the fact that he had to then go out and create like every single bit of crockery on the Titanic just so it would be authentic, and they're just things that we see break for 5 seconds.
One of his most
that's indulgent.
One of his most underrated films, I think,
is Avatar. No, sorry.
One of his most underrated films, I think, because I mean, even you walk into JB Hi-Fi right now, you won't find a copy. Mm. I think it's only available at this moment.
Piranha.
Funnily enough, I think you can find Piranha is more accessible than this one. At the moment, I know it's available in a box set of Arnold Schwarzenegger films, but True Lies.
I love True Lies.
Is True Lies hard to get?
You cannot get it in this country. It's one box set, which has got Arnold Schwarzenegger. It's not on Blu-ray.
I have True Lies on DVD for sure. From this country.
Yeah.
For sure, 100%.
I've got a copy of True Lies on DVD.
I don't think it's available now, though.
Years ago.
So, and now, I saw in the shops the other day, there's a Schwarzenegger box set which has like 5 films on it. Kindergarten Cop, Last Action Hero, blah, and True Lies. It's been literally relegated out to that
I've always got a soft spot for True Lies because my grandfather, who died a couple of years ago, was one of his favorite films. I think it was that, and it was that Police Story and Gladiator. He always got me to put on for him.
Fantastic!
And it was like, you know, I always, you know, remember watching that with him.
And so I love True Lies. And True Lies is funny. Yeah, it's clever. Awesome. It was. it was this True Lies, tight, little
frankly,
film.
Is a great film.
Yeah.
I don't care what anyone says.
You know what I love about True
James
Lies?
James Cameron's streak from that era is untouchable.
Amazing. Yeah.
True Lies was an interesting film.
And for me,
based
I'm actually a Titanic defender. Like, I'll defend
Titanic. I don't hate
Titanic. Not Avatar.
And I have a copy of it. And every now and again, I watch it. But it's not a film I go back to and go, wow, it's a great film.
Because I
go back and marvel at some of its production design. Yeah, I go back and marvel at some of its effects. But some of its effects do not hold up.
I think it's melodrama.
It's like a sentimental melodrama.
It is total melodrama. And I think there are bits of it work that bits of it don't. It holds up better to me now, 13 years on or whatever it is. Than more 15 oh god we have to be 17 years ago. Sorry, I went a little Harrison Ford there. We're kind of worked there. Than Avatar does, you know, 5 years on to me.
Well, that's a hard call. I think I would rather watch Avatar than Titanic.
I don't like Avatar. I didn't like it when I first saw it. I didn't like it when I rewatched it. I do not like it on a bike. I do not like it. I do not like it flying a kite. So, yeah.
I would happily sit through Titanic. I watched the 3D re-release.
Let's watch it now.
Yeah. But see, Titanic isn't that bad. I mean, the performances are, but you sort of, there is a joy that I have watching Titanic. Seeing the boat,
yeah, but Billy Zane is awful.
Yeah, I know, but like you got to get past
Billy
some
Zane.
Of that stuff.
He's cool, man. Yeah. Tell your friend Billy Zane to be totally cool.
Hey, he was the Phantom.
He was the Phantom.
Smash Evil.
Wasn't a Punch Evil?
No, Smash Evil.
Smash Evil.
No, but Titanic's an exercise. I don't think it's legitimately trying to be a movie. I really don't. I think Titanic. I don't. Yeah.
Oh, there's the quote, pull quote for the box.
I think Titanic is just
Titanic, not legitimately trying to be a movie.
No, yeah, true.
Definition of movie may change from set to state.
You can see it. Like he picks two main characters to fall in love. He picks the third class and the first class. So through the whole movie, you see every aspect of that boat.
I want to go and see the movie about the second class.
No, I seriously think that movie is written retroactively. I think it's like we need to see at some point how the boat worked beneath. You know, how they put the engines together. We need to see
it's basically
the
upstairs,
cabin,
downstairs,
you know?
On a boat.
Totally. It's like you just see every aspect of the ship. Like,
wow,
that's
hold on. That's upstairs, downstairs on a boat. Avatar is Fern Gully / Dances with Wolves. True Lies was actually a remake of a French film. Are we starting to say that there's no originality to James Cameron?
I think that might be true.
And remember, he had written Rambo 2 and then suddenly came out with Aliens, also about a group of Marines. Mm. I don't know. I think there might be...
Well, let's face it. Avatar was also pretty much a remake of Aliens as well. There's a lot of elements to that in there. And they're the bits I liked of Avatar. I can't believe there's going to be three sequels to that.
I don't think they're going to happen.
No.
I don't believe they're going to happen. I think
it's the only thing that'll sustain the New Zealand economy after Peter Jackson packs up and stops making
Peter
films.
Peter Jackson will never pack up.
No, well, I mean, he stopped making Lord of the Rings films.
Yeah, but he'll go on and make other... everything he wants to do now is mocap, which isn't going to give anybody a job, so...
No, that's true.
Hmm, that's not good. Anyway, we should probably wrap this kid up. What do you think?
Yeah, let's do it.
I'm now satisfied in hearing my voice with lush microphones.
Why don't we go out on that mixtape I mentioned?
Which mixtape would
that
be?
Mostly come out at night. Mostly.
Mostly. Okay, we're going to wrap this up. This club is now closed for the day. If you want to find more of you, Mr. Longo, where would you find you?
DanBigCup.com or Twitter at Dave Longo.
And Richard?
You can find me, and you won't hear my luscious voice, but you will hear me on Twitter at DVDBits. You can find me at BehindThePanels.net, and you can find me on Newsarama.com and TheRealBits.com. That's the RELLBits.com.
And you can find me at geekactually.com, or you can find me on Twitter at David McVeigh, or if you want to send feedback to this show, feedback@geekmovieclub.com. We also do have a Skype ID.
We have feedback before
we go. Oh, okay. Hold that thought. We also have a Skype. So if you want to leave voicemail, you can. Skype ID is geekactually, all one word. Now, what's our feedback?
We had a quick little bit of feedback. We mentioned over on Behind the Panels that Mitchell Deacon.
Oh, yes.
Rogue Sire wrote in. He had a PS. He said, I know this is the wrong email for the feedback, but he was writing it about behind the panels. But I have to say, the last episode of GMC, not last week's one, the one before where we lost it completely.
Oh, then that's so sure. Yeah.
Yeah, it was hilarious. Reminded me of the good old Geek Actually days. Complete mayhem. Loved it. Sorry this one was a little bit more controlled.
We're a little bit more controlled because we're actually very conscious of sound. We're very conscious of
my
sound.
My neck is
today.
Really stiff.
Yeah. We're very conscious of making sure we're talking down the barrel of the microphone.
I don't think any of us have had posture this good in years.
So, yes, we will get back to our
Richard
right
looks
ourselves.
Like he's been recording for 10 years.
I look like I've been balancing a book on my head. Oh, I should. You know what we should do as a reality show? Send me to finishing school for a month or something.
There you go. We'll film it. The longer you can film it, okay?
Yeah.
All right, we're going to get out of here. So you've got something for us to go out on, do you?
Yeah, probably.
All right, let me make sure you've got some sound up. Okay. I'm David McVeigh.
I'm Richard Gray.
Dave Longo.
And this has been Geek Movie Club. Take us out, Richard. Take it out the door. Nice symbol of my life. Roll them on the floor. From your grubby hands as you hit.